Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson. I'm a homeschool father of five, also a pastor in the Denver metro area. And Dave Buter also is in the studio with me. He's ditto. He's a father of five, homeschools his kids out here, and also pastors a church just south of here. And friends, I've been involved in the pro-life movement for a very long time. In fact, I was the pro-life candidate for governor of Colorado in 1994. I was the pro-life candidate for U.S. Senate in 1998 in the state. And I've done the best I can to stand for the principles of life from the very beginning, from the point at which I heard about abortion. I think I was about 19 years old, showed up at a university meeting. It was the Coalition of American Pro-Life University Students. They were screening the silent scream in 1983, and that pretty much set me on a track towards supporting the Christian position of life. And by the way, a pro-life position has been set by the church all the way from the very beginning, from the Didache to the letter of Barnabas, to the Didascalia and of course Augustine as well. So a pro-life position is really the position of the church and has been for 2,000 years. And when churches turn away from a pro-life position, they are turning away from an effectively Christian position. They're no longer Christian. And this is, I think, one of the critical mass issues when it comes to the definition of the faith in the 21st century. And you better figure out what the faith is in the 21st century, or you will be part of the apostasy that is racing across the Western world. All right, here are a couple of stories that I want to cover. One from lifenews.com. Very interesting stuff, because I've been part of the personhood movement in the state of Colorado. Dave, you remember I was a sponsor for this. Planned Parenthood took me to the Supreme Court of Colorado about 2-3 years ago. We won the case, but in the end we're not able to make it onto the ballot. But Planned Parenthood worked very, very hard against me, and I still am very, very happy to hold a document that effectively is a court document that takes on Kevin Swanson as the in a suit. So I'm happy to be an opponent of one of the most pro-abortion organizations in America, Planned Parenthood.
So what you're saying is Planned Parenthood is not pro-choice when it comes to voting on the ballot about personhoods.
Yeah, they did not.
They're not pro-choice that way.
No. They're not pro-choice to people being able to vote on the issue of life, because they are so committed to the agenda of death that they would never, ever, ever want anybody to choose life. Okay, now, here is a important story that ties into my commitment to personhood for the unborn child, and it's lifenews.com, where a group out in New York is suing for legal personhood for chimps. And this happens to be the state where the highest abortion
rate. You're monkeying around with me. No.
It's true. It's true. They're going for...
Wait a minute. In Colorado, we can't get humans to be recognized as persons, but they want chimps.
They're going to go for chimps, yeah. This is legal personhood for chimps amongst those who hate human life. And apparently, they're big time trying to defend human life for a 26-year-old chimp named Tommy.
Tell me, will they be put on the path to citizenship that the GOP is pushing right now, too? Will we just go ahead, if they're born here,
they ought to be able to vote. Board. Don't you think they should vote? I mean, if
they can't do much worse than the voters.
Yeah. So the chimps, they're pushing for the chimps to get personhood in the state of New York.
Now, will a chimp have a right to say to get a concealed carry permit?
I don't know. This is New York. I doubt it.
To drive?
I don't know. Maybe. He is a cognitively complex, autonomous legal person with a fundamental legal right not to be imprisoned.
Are we talking about the chimp now, or are we talking about the guy pushing it?
This is Tommy.
The chimp.
This is not the guy pushing it. This is Tommy, the chimp.
Okay. We're not talking about the attorney. We're not talking about the judge.
No, we're talking
about this primate.
Right. So the group out in New York is suing for legal personhood for chimps. All right. Well, let's move on. That's probably not worth considering. But, I mean, it's interesting, Dave. There are those who push for personhood for chimps, and then there are those who push for personhood for innocent children. And, Dave, once you've abandoned the idea that there is a God who's created us as distinct from the animals, once you say, hey, evolution is not right, and we are not on a continuous evolutionary scale from amoebas up into human life, we're not on that scale. Once you say, I'm sorry, there is no scale, there is no evolutionary scale, does not exist. God has put us on a level a little lower than the angels, and crowned us with glory and honor. Once you said that, you've parted ways with the anthropology of the evolutionists in 97% of America. Okay, you've already parted ways. I don't tie into that metaphysic, that theory of origins. I tie into a Christian theory of origins, and therefore I believe in the defense of human life. But if not, Dave, you're going to wind up like Richard Dawkins,
who works very, very hard for these animal rights issues and also defends pedophilia.
He goes bananas for it.
Yeah. Okay, now here's another story that ties into this. And friends, today the program is going to, I think, address the issue of the humanness of children and the fact that God defends the lives of children by his laws. He has laid out laws whereby you cannot take a child's life willy-nilly. You can't do it. It is against God's law to do it. And we can, not based on natural law, but based on revealed law, we can stand up and say it's wrong to destroy human life. And that includes human life in the womb of its mother. The Bible makes no exception for that. Okay, here's another story from New Zealand, Dave. And this one's actually sort of sad. But it's important because I think it's directive for what's happening in our world today and what's going to happen in 20 years from now. This is from New Zealand. The New Zealand Court of Appeals has decided that the appearance of a baby who was born in 2007 with spina bifida, despite being given a clean bill of health at a 20-week ultrasound, may be eligible to receive compensation under the nation's accident compensation scheme. The mother, whose name has not been released, has claimed that had she been given correct diagnosis after that scan, she would have aborted her daughter. We consider that the continued pregnancy of the appellant following a misdiagnosis in the 20-week scan is capable of being an injury suffered by the appellant, the court ruled. Although the routine anatomy scan was performed at 20 weeks gestation, no anomalies were recorded by the radiographer. Independent specialists have examined the scan images and found that there was evidence of spina bifida present. Now, Dave, the woman evidently would have aborted her child. Now, that's a real sweet mom. Imagine growing up with a mom.
Imagine Mother's Day.
I should have killed you. I should have killed you in my womb. When I had a chance, I should have killed you. Imagine growing up with a woman who speaks that way. That's not how they speak in New Zealand.
No, that's not how they speak in New Zealand. But imagine the warm Mother's Day card that must be sent. Dear Mom,
thanks
sorry I'm alive. Maybe I'll be dead next year.
Thanks
Happy
for not,
Mother's Day.
Thanks for not killing me, Mom. Love me.
Talk about growing up with insecurities. Imagine a child that grows up knowing that mom wanted to kill you because you weren't the perfect child she wanted. I mean, does it get more hurtful than that?
Yeah. And, of course, we have the technology now to kill a child to know whether it's exactly the kind of child you want. You can do kind of amniocentesis testings and other things to determine whether the child really meets your expectations. If not, you can kill the child in the womb. That's the way it is today. Couldn't do that in the 1840s. Couldn't do that in the 1880s.
Don't really know until they're about 18 years old.
Yeah, well, that too. So maybe push for the 36th trimester abortion.
They could be genetically perfect, but psychologically imperfect.
Yeah, yeah. And I think a number of teenagers prove themselves to be psychologically deficient.
Unfortunately, a large number.
Yeah. So if that be the case, maybe 36 trimester abortions might be in order for the humanists who insist on killing. Now, the folks, the point is that this technology has enabled modern-day abortion and eugenics that was not something you could do, that you had the technology to pull off in the 1700s, 1800s. This is the first time in human history where we've had the ability to make these ethical choices and prove ourselves to be the self-centered, narcissistic, existentialist jerks that we are. What, 95%? We did a story about a year ago. 95% of kids conceived with Down syndrome are killed prior to birth in London, in England. And that's, I think, largely because of their socialist medicine. And, of course, we're going to see more of that. Dave, here's what happens here. Because these suits are being won right and left by parents whose kids were born with deficiencies, because the courts are enabling these suits, Dave, here's what's happening. These hospitals are going to default to abort. You're going to have to sign a document if you want to keep a child with spina bifida or Down syndrome. That's what's going to happen. In other words, the default is going to be, okay, we've got to automatically test. We have to do the amniocentesis. Otherwise, we'll be sued. You know, the doctors are going to kill the children by default because otherwise they'll be afraid they'll be sued. In case they didn't tell the parents and warn them of all the hassle these kids were going to be for the parents.
I may be more cynical than you, Kevin. I'm not sure that's going to be the case. I think you're going to get a 90-day guarantee that if you don't like the child in the first 90 days, you can just bring them back and they'll take care of it at any time. You look what's happening in Belgium with the euthanasia laws. I don't think that any life is going to be considered sacred. Do you think this girl with spina bifida, when she grows up, that she's going to be at all opposed to euthanizing her mother who wanted to kill her. I just think, Kevin, that we cannot overestimate how much life will be underestimated.
It's hard to believe that 80 million baby boomers are in good hands after they have killed 80 million children in the last 30, 40 years since Roe v. Wade. It's hard to imagine that they're in safe hands, especially if they get a little sniffle and they don't get out to do their work and they become a burden on the family. And maybe they have significant inheritance that would be nice for the kids. They certainly don't want that used up on extra measures for, you know, taking care of their health in their old age.
Well, and not only will you have families making decisions to euthanize and to kill, you'll have governments making those decisions. You think about what a government nationalized healthcare system means. In order to have a profitable endeavor, or one that doesn't go into debt by $1 trillion a month, you're going to have to limit liabilities, which means that some people, expensive people, people in need of medicine are not going to be able to get it at the very least. And at the very most, they'll just be removed from the rolls and removed from breathing.
What in the world are we doing with children? At one time, people took good care of their children. They cared about their children a fair amount. In fact, our husky just had two puppies, and man, I'm impressed with how that mama dog takes care of her puppies. But you certainly aren't seeing that with humans much anymore. Whatever used to be common, natural love that mothers had for children is virtually gone. Virtually gone. In the present day. Now, there are exceptions. There are exceptions. But, hey, after killing 80 million babies, you can bet we're going to be a little jaded. Of course. Be back in just a moment. This is Kevin Swanson. Every year, Generations with Vision sponsors a family economics conference somewhere in America. This year, we are sponsoring a conference in Denver, Colorado on March 27 to 29, 2014. This is for families who want to reintegrate the family into a family economic vision, for families who want to find ways to mentor their sons and daughters into the family economy. This is just the conference for you. How do you choose the optimum business streams for your family? How do you integrate your children into the family economy? What about budgets and debt and capital investments? And what about inheritance and taking care of grandpa and grandma along the way? We'll have young entrepreneur panels, mom and daughter panels, retail and e-commerce panels, audience surveys, and some great keynote speakers, including family economics guru Alan Carlson and entrepreneur Dave Tucker, and yours truly, Kevin Swanson. Join us for our Family Economics Conference in our backyard, Denver, Colorado, March 27 to 29, 2014. Register today at FamilyEconomics.com. That's FamilyEconomics.com. Register now. Early registration ends on December 31st. Welcome back to the Generations Radio Broadcast. Kevin Swanson here with you, talking about the importance of preserving children and looking out for children. The world doesn't do this. But Jesus said in Matthew 18, verse 6, if you stumble one of these little ones who believes in me, it would be better for you that a millstone be hanged around your neck and be drowned on the bottom of the sea, which seems to me to be a fairly severe treatment for somebody who stumbles a child. And that's why it's so important that you don't kill them. That would be stumbling a child. You wouldn't want to kill a child or murder a child. And certainly you would not want to stumble a child or send them into an environment in which they would be stumbled emotionally, mentally, or spiritually, or even physically. And that's what happens oftentimes in the public school environment. And that's why we're rather concerned that within the public schools, there aren't very many people who are teaching the fear of God as the beginning of wisdom, which ultimately is the beginning of character. And so they have a wrong definition of character. And the public schools can be very dangerously emotionally and such. I just got an email this morning, Dave, from a fellow somewhere. I can't remember where. He has four children in the public schools. He says he's thinking about taking them out because there's a fair amount of bullying going on. I think they're in a classical public school or charter school or something. But he's planning to take them out. He's thinking about homeschooling them. And he says there's just a lot of bullying going on. And I think we ought to be cautious with what we do with our children. We ought not just to toss them into these environments.
Well, Kevin, I'm thoroughly convinced that God requires men, fathers, to protect their families.
Yeah.
And that's protect them physically from, I'm sure, this bullying comment reflected physical bullying, but there's also emotional, and then there is spiritual bullying. We hardly ever talk about that. And that's where a teacher gets up there, and a teacher has some authority, and you want your children to respect authority, and the teacher is teaching against the authority, which is Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and Dave, I've never had a millstone tied around my neck and sort of thrown into a lake, but I don't think that would be pleasant.
Well, after the first 5 or 10 minutes or so, it has a, it's kind of a lull. But drowning at the bottom of the sea would not be pleasant.
Not pleasant.
And there are probably some eternal consequences after that.
Yeah. Okay, so a pretty severe warning from our Lord in Matthew 18 and verse 6. But now, Dave, we've talked a little bit about the police and how the police handle people. And there are good cops and bad cops. Now, we did a Nazi cops program a couple of days ago. And I got a little pushback. Not a lot. I had some Christian cops write in and say, good job, I'm right there with you. Let's do a conference. You know, let's get a biblical worldview going in the area of law. And let's defend the innocent and convict the guilty. You know, that's cool. The whole Matthew or Romans 13 idea for the civil magistrate's a great idea. And we have, I think, 3 or 4 police officers and sheriff's deputies that are behind this idea around America. And if there are more, I need about 10 or 15 to get behind this. I'd like in 2015 to do a principled police officer or law enforcement officer project in which we do a conference and we do some teaching from God's Word concerning how to handle this position in a wise and Christian way. It would be a Romans 13 conference, and I think it'd be critical, especially with the decline of the faith and the decline of character amongst the police force in our present day. Now, Dave, many examples of this. I think I'm getting about one a day in the news. Sadly, there was a 19-year-old girl who was raped by a police officer down in Texas a couple of weeks ago. I've got another one here where a 10-year-old boy was tasered by a police officer. This is kind of a sad story. Again, New Mexico. So the last story we covered was New Mexico, too. New Mexico police officers, we need to hear from some principled ones out there saying, hey, yeah, we're really working hard on establishing a good standard of principles for the New Mexico police officers. Well, this is career day at a junior high, and this poor little boy was sitting there in the classroom, and this police officer asked a group of boys who would like to clean his patrol unit, and this little boy said,
what kind of career is that? It was the police officer to talk about a career in a car wash?
No, it was yeah, exactly. He came for a car wash. Well, one little boy said he did not want to clean the car, and so the police officer tased him. Pulled out a taser and tased him.
Well, he did say first, let me show you what happens to those who do not listen to the police. This is what happens.
Yeah. It was a demo. It was career day. It was a demo.
You will clean my car or I will tase you.
So he was trying to put the kids through the full experience of what it was like to be treated as a criminal. And
perhaps the child was thinking about a career as a convict. And
okay,
this is how police treat convicts. This is what you have to look forward to.
Yeah. So it's kind of a sad story. The guy's getting reprimanded, probably going to lose his job, or did lose his job. So anyway, friends, another horrible story about bad police officers. And again, another reason why we need a biblical concept of law enforcement. We need this vision to get out there somewhere, and we need some of our young sons to take on the position of law enforcement and district attorneys if we're going to defend the innocent and actually go after the bad guys. I mean, really, and be able to distinguish that. I personally think, Dave, that more and more it's becoming unclear in the minds of the masses as to what constitutes good and evil. Why? Because, friends, we're growing up in a society where it's wonderful to do sodomy in the streets, but you sure wouldn't want to use doorknobs in your house that you're building in Vancouver. Okay? You're going to get arrested for having the wrong doorknobs in Vancouver. And meanwhile, Christians who speak against homosexuality in Canada will be fined. Okay, so we're in a society in which that's happening. Now, let me ask you this. Do you think it'd be a good time to establish a Christian perspective on law enforcement and do one of the very first conferences, probably the first conference in the history of the nation, on the Romans 13 concept of Christian law enforcement? I think it's time to do it. And if you're interested, please join the 4 to 5 guys that already said, hey, count me in. Email me at host@kevinswanson.com. And give me some contacts, friends. We've got to get something like this off the ground. Okay, now, here's the next story, Dave. We got to move on. We're talking again. The theme this morning has to do with how we're treating children. And this story comes from My Fox News in Tampa Bay. Apparently there's a new movie out called Frozen. I haven't seen it yet, Dave. Have you seen it?
Frozen. No.
It's a kid's movie. It's kind of a G-rated thing. I don't know, maybe PG-rated, but it's a movie that lots and lots and lots of kids are watching. And
Disney,
they were,
right?
They were, I'm not sure. They're watching this thing at a place called Stadium 16 in Pinellas Park, Florida. And evidently, the parents and the grandparents got a not-so-friendly surprise in the middle of it. I was appalled. I hate to use the word, but I was, said Lynn Green of Largo, Florida. Lynn Green was there with her grandchildren for a day-after-Thanksgiving trip to the movies. She recalls that there was some technical difficulty delaying the start time. The theater temporarily played another cartoon. Then they put in the filler. It looked like Steamboat Willie, the old Mickey Mouse cartoon, and then all of a sudden it goes into this other scene, says Green. She says the other scene was sexually explicit and lasted several minutes. It seemed like forever when you're trying to, you know, cover a little guy's eyes. And like I said, I didn't have enough hands to cover his ears, too, and he got the sound down real good, Green said. So then it goes on and on. The family was really concerned about this. Other families were as well. Evidently, it was something of an accident that happened, but Dave, there's way too many of the preview views in these movies. I mean, you go and you watch a PG movie, you're going to watch some horrific stuff in the previews. And more parents are saying, hey, we're just not even going to show up anymore. Well, we're not going to do these movies at all.
Let's back up a minute. The theater apparently owns a copy and has on its premise a cartoon with sexually explicit material.
Yeah,
with that. Why in the world does a theater have a sexual explicit cartoon the chain of custody of that explicit cartoon, allowing it to be shown to children who are there to see something much more innocent? This is a serious offense against the innocence of children. This is not isn't that funny event. This is the destruction of children.
And we all know that cable television is going the same direction. I mean, we all know that R-rated stuff is being shown all the
network.
Time. Yeah, all the network stuff, too. And, Dave, less and less, way less restriction on the on what's happening, what's airing. And I did a study on this. I picked up a study online. I don't have it in front of me, but somebody has done a study that looked at sexual explicit scenes in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and the present decade in primetime television. And so they did a survey, and there's one kiss in the 60s, like 1961, two kisses in 62, three kisses in 70, and so forth. By the time you get to the present decade, Dave, it's like 475 explicit references to sexuality, and it's something like six times the incidence of the 1990s, and another 12 times the incidence of what they saw in terms of sexually explicit materials in the 1980s. So you're seeing an exponential increase. If you graph this, and the study had a graph on this. It's just way, way, way worse. If you had reservations about your children watching television in the 1980s, things are about 15 times worse today, 15 times worse today than they were in the 1980s, friends. 15 times worse. And something like 375 times worse than they were in the 1960s. So in terms of explicit sexuality, explicit fornication scenes, or references to fornication, or references to bestiality, or references to group sex, or, you're going to see way, way, way more of that in primetime television today than you did back in the 1950s, 1960s. Everybody knows that. I mean, I'm not saying anything to anybody that they don't know. It's just that there aren't that many parents who are saying, it's not like there's 375 times more parents saying, no way would we ever let our children watch primetime television. My guess is most evangelical parents, most fundamentalist Christian parents allow their children to watch primetime television.
Kevin, it's a full court press on our children and on our innocence. And by the way, I think it's also an attack on men and women at the same time. Last year, I wanted to sit down one Sunday evening during the playoffs, watch a football game with my sons. I feel a little bit like I haven't trained my sons to understand some of the American sports. And we're watching the football game. All's fine and good. They go to the commercial. They got the cheerleaders. Okay, that's a little embarrassing. We kind of look away. And then comes the commercials. Well, the beer commercials are bad enough, celebrating drunkenness and fornication. But then comes the most offensive things ever, and they are the network promotions for their own pro-fornicating lifestyle shows that they're going to show. Some of these are about couple swapping and fornicating dates, and it goes on and on. And that's just network television during prime time. This is not, you know, 11 o'clock at night. This is during prime time, during family hour. Think about the last time you went into a shopping mall. Abercrombie and Fitch will stick out in many people's minds as the place,
yeah,
in which, you know, you got the homoerotic thing going on, but it's up and down the aisles. Have you seen a JCPenney ad lately? The people at the malls, there's a full court press. Just go to Walmart.
They're doing
the family store and look at, try and buy a dress for a girl. They don't hardly sell dresses, and the dresses that they sell used to be called slips.
Yeah. Yeah. And the sexualization of children is everywhere. You know, we've read these stories to you, friends, from the mainstream media. They're all saying it. It's not like we're a bunch of right-wing weirdos in the basement.
Well, we are.
We are. Yeah.
We are.
But we're not the only ones saying this. My point is, we're not the only ones saying this. Just the world knows that they're sexualizing kids. And it was interesting, Dave, in this article about, you know, these kids in Tampa Bay being opened up to all the sexualized material. And I'm reading the comments under this story from guys like Cody Ray and Mike Bryant. And they're saying, hey, what's wrong with this? Sexualize the kids. Sexualize the kids. This is good. Sexualize the kids. And, of course, Dave, there's so many people these days that love pedophilia, probably almost as much as Richard Dawkins does, who has endorsed some level of pedophilia. What's the big issue with this pedophilia concern?
That's what Jerry Sandusky keeps asking.
Come on.
He's confused.
Everybody all concerned about this for? Now, the sexualization of kids is everywhere. And it's, of course, opening up more of the Pandora's box to pedophilia. And, friends, it's just moving more and more in that direction. And, Dave, of course, this is the destruction of the image of God by the sexual violation of, well, teenagers, kids, people out of wedlock, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, this is just the violation of the image of God.
Kevin,
they're celebrating it.
Kevin, this is Pharaoh's and Herod's policy. This is to destroy children before they can raise up and become something. This is we've talked about destroying them in the womb, destroying them if they're not perfect. Now we're talking about destroying their innocence. This is the very program that Egypt launched in order to try and keep the Moses that was to come from delivering people and showing them a way of God's law and a way of freedom. This is the same program that Herod instituted in trying to destroy the Messiah, the one who would deliver them from the Egypt of their sins. This is a program to destroy innocence and the opportunity for pastors and fathers and mothers to raise up new generations without being defiled themselves. This is an assault on future generations.
Yeah, and if they can't kill them in the womb, they'll do everything they can to damage them once they get out of the womb, and they will damage them by way of this sexualization, friends. And it will either set them up for sexual sin in their lives or sexual abuse, or it will set them up for what I would call sexual nihilism, which is inevitably the destruction of sexuality found in homosexuality and then the birth implosions that we're seeing in the Western world. So this is all a destructive agenda. And I guess what we want to say this morning is we got to get back to the Word of God and protect our children by teaching them the Book of Proverbs, the principles concerning sexuality found in the Book of Proverbs. The principles concerning character, the fear of God, the respect of human life. The very basic principles of life are really found in the Book of Proverbs. Honestly, friends, if you want to love your children, raise them in the fear of God. Teach them the principles of God's Word. Teach them the Book of Proverbs. It's one reason why we put together as many family Bible study guides, beginning with the Book of Proverbs and the Book of Psalms, the Book of Matthew, the Book of Genesis. All of these are available at our website, kevinswanson.com. And I would encourage you to give your children the very best. Don't just turn them over to anybody to educate. Give your children the very best teaching, the very best raising in the midst of a society that's going downhill fast. You're going to have to do something radically different than whatever's happening out there, friends. And if you love your children, you're really going to give them a Christian paideia. And that, of course, would begin with the Book of Proverbs, because that is the original textbook. You got to trust God on this one. He knows what he's doing. And when he said, here's a book on knowledge, wisdom, and understanding, it's for young men and young women, you've got to give them that book
or you would be a complete idiot. So give them the book of Proverbs, and that's why we've done the Proverbs Bible study guides available at our website, kevinswanson.com. By the way, if anybody needs some of our resources, can't afford it, or can't pay whatever's required, just email me. Some lady did that this morning and said, hey, can't afford this.
Maybe they
could send us this.
Maybe they could clean your car.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, and we won't tase them. We will not tase anybody. Okay? So if you can't afford something, just email me at host@kevinswanson.com, and we'd love to send you our resources. This is Kevin Swanson, and I want to invite you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.